Visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
The paranormal.
Ghosts.
Spirits. The paranormal.
Ghosts.
Spirits.
Demons.
Reincarnation.
Past lives.
The afterlife.
Divination.
Exorcisms.
Witchcraft.
The unseen.
He's psychic medium Chris George.
And he's Victor the Voice Furman.
We are Second Sight Radio. Join us live
every Thursday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time
on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
If you are listening to the show and wish to join us in the chat room, visit paltalk.com. Go to the social issues, select other, and enter the UFO Paranormal Radio Network.
Tune in to the Mind Cemetery with your hosts Chip and Nicole every Monday night at 9 p.m. Eastern.
Exclusively on the UFO Paranormal Radio Network. We delve into UFOs, abductions, ghosts, aliens, conspiracies, and cryptozoology.
And how could you ever forget about those creepy topics you won't hear on your local news?
This is where I would insert my obligatory skeptical statement. The Mind Cemetery, where the paranoia about the paranormal comes to rest.
Follow us on Twitter and subscribe to us on Facebook. Also, check us out on our website, mindcemetery.com, for show updates and the critically acclaimed Mind Cemetery blog.
It's not critically acclaimed, but you should check it out anyway. mindcemetery.com.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Benetti, and along with Joe Montaldo, we host News on the Flip Side. Come join us every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Central for our three-hour program. We have opinions on everything, and we're not afraid to share them. False history gets made all day, every day. The truth of the new is never on the news, but you can find it here with News on the Flip Side. Remember, don't be politically correct. Just be correct. Join us.
Tune in to UFO Undercover, Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern, with your host, Joe Montaldo, right here on the Paranormal Radio Network.
Bridge Universe. Sorry about those little technical issues we were having there. A little drama popped off, and then, hell, neither of us or Joe could really get into Pal Talk and make it work, but that's neither here nor there. Now, hey, Heather, hey, Joe, you guys still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Yeah, I'll be back in a second. I'm here, but I'll be back.
All right, Joe got to go get some munchies real quick, but, I don't know, Heather, what do you think about the news this week? I'm a little bit disappointed. It seems like pretty much the news this week is more or less like the news last week, except with a couple of different twists to it, right?
Well, I don't know. The water news out here isn't getting any better. It's getting worse from some of the headlines I've been reading. So they're getting more dire out here.
Yeah, I mean, did you read about the situation in California where it's like basically the federal government is restricting water that the farmers need in California, and a lot of people are trying to play it off as some kind of a political thing, but...
Well, it's not. It's a water rights issue, and that's what people don't understand, and that's also happening here in Colorado and Nevada. In Colorado, it's been going on for 10 years or more with water rights. And what people don't understand is if you have a higher priority, when they talk on the news about higher priority, means your higher priority, you have the oldest water rights, and you have more water rights than someone that's younger. And so if you have younger rights, during droughts, you get cut off. That's what they're talking about, and that's what people don't understand. It's a water rights issue in the West. And when they say the federal government, you have the Bureau of Reclamation, you have different agencies doing it. You have the federal government, which regulates the states with the Western Compact, the Colorado Compact, which regulates Colorado water, which seven states use. That's that compact. Then you have at the state, so each state is allocated some part of the Colorado water, right? And out here in the West, you know, and same here out in Nevada, you have the Truckee River. Well, there's certain water rights for certain users. And when you get cut off, it's due to the drought. Not everyone can have that water because there's not enough to go around and we are using too much of it. So people don't understand, it's politics, but it's regulated. You know, it's very well regulated. And if people can't understand that, I suggest you go and watch online. You can watch. It's called Cadillac Desert. You can watch it on YouTube. Watch that, and you'll understand some of the stuff behind it. Or read the book. That's a really good. It'll give you a good primer for what's going on right now. So that's what I recommend for everyone. And everything with climate change, it's going to get worse. It's not going to get any better. And like I said before, I mean, I expect in our lifetime, Hoover Dam will not be able to produce electricity. That's coming. I mean, we're going to see it. When? Could be 2 years, it could be 5 years away. I'm not going to give a date, but we will see it. It's going to be really scary, and food prices are going to skyrocket.
Yeah, there's an article on Zero Hedge, and I forget where they had sourced the article from. I want to say it was...
They did. I have it, Food Inflation Watch, California. Farmers' water costs surged 700%. They did Bloomberg as one of the reports, but this has been going on for the last couple of years. So in Nevada, they're cutting off water, I think, next week to some of the users with the ditches. And so we're in a severe drought right now. If you look at the map of the drought, you can go on for the U.S., you can just say drought monitor, and you can Google that, bring that up. We're currently in that little red zone, and that's a severe drought. Severe, severe. Along with, when you look up at the updated earthquake map, we're also in that red zone, too. So it's like, okay.
Yeah, just like looking at like the prices that they're paying for water now, I mean, you know, like an acre foot of water, which is what, like $330,000 or so? I mean, dollars, gallons or so? I mean, those were going for like $140 last year, and now that much water is going for something like $1,200. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. what this is basically going to mean to everybody, and unfortunately this is an issue that, I mean, everybody thinks it doesn't really affect them. You know, I can flush my toilet and turn on my sinks and water still comes out of them, so everything's awesome, right? But I don't know, this might be one of those little points where it actually gets kind of weird, and, you know, you'll be paying $6.49 for a head of lettuce this, you know, by the end of summer.
And like I said, too, it's going to come down to one of those days you're going to have to decide, do you want your shower, do you want your bath, do you need to really wash your clothes? People think I'm crazy, but that day is coming, and you want green lawns, I mean, you want to golf on the golf course. Those questions we're going to hit up really soon, really, really soon. And not only that, but San Joaquin and the California produces a lot of our food, along with out, and we've talked about this too, Kansas, you know, they grow a lot of the wheat, and you have the Ogallala out there. Well, there was another This is on Huffington Post. NASA satellites reveal shocking groundwater loss in Colorado River Basin. Well, yeah, we're overpumping it. I read another article last week, you know, I think it was out of UC Davis. They don't know how much water we're using and how much is left in these aquifers. And like we've talked about, you can't refill these. These came through the ice ages, through the last ice age, you know. You can't take a hose and refill it. And knowing that, the recharge rate on these aquifers are probably thousands of years. So,
Heather, I think the sad thing about it is we can go academic and explain the situation to everybody as much as we can, but I just think the general population doesn't care. I mean, I think it's got to hit them in some way that's, like, feasible to them, that it's got to make a big enough media buzz for the water rights issue to gain any traction. I mean, on alternative media like us, about it. But I think it's got to be something like this. Like, you mentioned what's going on in California. I mean, what about all these Napa Valley vineyards and all these fine California wines that everybody's in such a fuss about? I mean, nobody's going to care until these vineyards start saying, hey, we don't have any water to grow your wine. And
there's going to be no wine. Well, exactly. They're going to have a shortage. You're going to see shortages in wines. You're going to see shortages. I mean, I've already noticed at the grocery store walking through, I mean, you start looking. I've noticed, at least in the seafood section, I mean, this is another thing we could talk about. The oceans are collapsing, you know. I've already noticed the last couple of years there's not a lot of seafood in those cases and in the frozen sections. You know, we've overfished, overpopulated, and by the way, the algae is 50% gone right now, which algae is like the lifeblood of those oceans.
Yeah, and if you go to like your local grocer's freezer section where they've got all the fish, where they got all the fish products there, if you take a look at everything, very little of it is actually like wild caught or raised anymore. And if you look at like the origins on most of it, I mean, a lot of it is farm raised in China. And I know another thing that's kind of scary is, if you're out there listening, man, there might be a shrimp shortage, because there have been a lot of diseases that have been going through a lot, especially the Asian factory farms, I mean, for all kinds of seafood. And
well, it's not just seafood. It's also been with the pigs. I think there is a disease with the pigs, too, recently. I mean, it's hitting everything. Diseases are hitting everywhere.
I know they're missing. I mean, our shrimp's in jeopardy. Our bacon is in jeopardy. I mean,
everything. Yeah, everything. Our whole lifeblood of what we need to live and survive on this planet is at jeopardy. I mean, I think you and I talked about this. I think was it last weekend? I watched Snowpiercer. It's another dystopian movie film about the future, and it's not very pleasant to watch. But you're watching it, just shaking your head. And I recently just reread Ray Bradbury's books, and it's just like he does not paint a pretty picture. It's kind of scary because he wrote those back in the 40s and 50s when you had the Cold War, and he talks a lot about nuclear war. Well, nuclear war could still happen. That's very much could happen still today. I mean, and then you look at Fukushima, and that's the gift that keeps on giving that never ends. WIP is still going on. Hanford is a mess. you know, you're shaking your head at, we have these enormous problems. We don't have the technology. I don't know. I just don't have any faith in anything right now because, first, people, yeah, like you said, people don't want to acknowledge there's a problem. Two, everyone's so, I know a lot of people are just surviving because I'm talking to my friends here and everyone's just getting by. No one has any money, literally. No one has any money to do anything. Everyone's broke. I mean, it's just kind of, it's a tinderbox. The U.S. is a tinderbox, and when it goes, who knows what it'll be that spurs it off. It could be anything.
I mean, I'm a little bit, if it's possible, I'm, a little bit less optimistic about everything, because one of the articles I came across yesterday was, and I'd heard about it when it happened, but now, some of the media is starting to pick it up. I want to say New York Daily picked this one up and ran with it, but, they mentioned that massive solar flare that, missed the Earth by something 2 days. Actually today, 2 years ago, that, we came extremely close to, catching, they're saying this one could have been worse than the Carrington event. If this solar flare had caught the Earth straight up in the face instead of barely missing us.
Knowing that you could add on...
have our electric grid back up and running.
Yeah. There goes Facebook. But, yeah, it's like, knowing that, we've had near misses with asteroids. We're in a shooting gallery with asteroids, too. You know, that could hit us at any time.
Look at it as we're sort of at the point of the Malthusian collapse. And a while back, there was a gentleman named John Malthus who basically came up with the projection that if the human population growth keeps happening exponentially like it does, that there will, like almost any other system in nature, there will be an overpopulation and an eventual crash, and it basically wouldn't be very pretty. And I don't know, a lot of people say that's just doom and gloom thinking and that it could never happen because, look at what we've done. More people than ever, we're feeding everybody, but our supply chains and everything is so precocious right now that, it wouldn't take very much to, kick off any kind of Malthusian collapse.
What people also forget is we're part of this ecosystem. A lot of people are excluding us. We are part of this Earth ecosystem. And just we're like any other, animal on this planet, your population can only go so far before it collapses. And look right now what we're seeing. We're seeing Ebola in Africa, which looks like it's starting to spin out of control.
Oh, God, did you read today's extremely scary story about it? I think it's called Freeport? Free something, anyway. Anyway, the capital of Sierra Leone that has about a population of about 1 million people. A person that was diagnosed with Ebola, her family came and forcibly removed her from the hospital and put her out there into the wild, and I'm like, Ebola's winning this one. Straight up, Ebola is winning this one, and a lot of it is simply because of human stupidity.
Well, yeah, but not only have that, but you have, was it they're trying to track in the mosquitoes now? Is it Chianga? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right.
Rick, we've already heard reports that they're not letting the World Health Organization into certain areas where Ebola is breaking out because of, local... taboos or blaming the health workers for the thing, and they're basically letting the disease run unchecked. And this man was a hero. I believe his name was Sheikh Something Khan. I'm sorry, I should look this up and mention the man's name at least when I'm, mentioning him on radio. But he was basically the head Ebola doctor in Sierra Leone, and he's been infected with it. He's got about a 1 in 10 chance of living. And I mentioned something about it on social media, but I have to say it about this. This man is a true hero. He's a true hero. He probably just gave his life, in an attempt to help others and to stop, the scariest disease on the planet just about. from spreading through his country, his homeland, and the rest of the world. I mean, this man was a true hero. He was fighting there on the front lines, and I just have to say this. When you consider who a hero is, I mean, to me, a hero isn't somebody with a bunch of guns running around in dangerous situations with a license to kill. That's not a hero. Anybody can get out there and play Rambo. Dr. Khan, you were a hero, and I am keeping my fingers crossed that you're that 10% that, I mean, I hope you're not bleeding out of every orifice, but I hope you make it, man.
Well, yeah, but and then you add on top of it, was it 2 weeks ago? Was it last week when the CDC, when they were investigating, because the CDC with these, you know, with their practices at the CDC lab with all these rare diseases in their labs, they're storing them in Ziploc baggies, and you're looking
yeah,
at
you
this going, oh, my God. You
yeah,
know,
you gotta wonder
insane.
How something like that happened. I mean, were two little contractors that didn't know what they were dealing with, were they just ordered to clear out this room and move out of this crap in storage, and they're like, hey, man, what you think all these are? Man, they said move it, put it in a box, and put it down in storage. I mean, did something like that happen? I hope not.
From what it sounds like, I mean, but you got to remember, Congress has cut back every other agency's budget besides. The only agencies' budgets which have grown are defense and our intelligence agencies. So they're spying the crap out of us, but they're cutting everything else. So, of course, I mean, when I worked at the Forest Service, I mean, it's pitiful. They have – Forest Service basically has money to fight fires right now, and they can't do anything else. That's where all their budget is going, and everything else is deteriorating. So when you go to those camps, you know, when you go on Forest Service land to camp and you have those water systems, you got to realize they're 60 years old, you know. So when you get the water and stuff isn't working or they're not turning on, that stuff is 60 years old. They haven't had the money to, they've never kept up on the maintenance of it. They don't have the money to go back and really fix it. So what does that tell you?
Yeah, we're kind of going through like, it's been going on for a few years now, but here in Texas we're having an infrastructure problem with our natural gas utility system. And basically, like exactly like you said, they are being forced to finally do something about it because all those old metal gas pipes, I mean, that were put in the ground 40, 50 years ago, I mean, they're starting to oxidize, they're starting to corrode, and they're starting to lose their integrity like, you know, basically happens to everything else. And they've actually been forced to replace them here, I mean, through the edge of my yard by the street, actually. And, oh, man, I wish Joe was here to get his opinion on this one, but this kind of surprises me. I mean, I'm assuming that it's a good product and that it's certainly safer than the old leaky stuff they have, but they're basically replacing all of the metallic gas lines here with, like, a PVC plastic type. And I'm like, ooh, you know, I mean, I don't really have any problem with PVC carrying hot water from my hot water heater to, like, you know, the spigot on my tub and to my sinks, but just seeing plastic lines on... Just seeing plastic lines that they're running natural gas to, I mean, that's kind of scary. I mean, it would be kind of hard for my shovel to errantly pierce a metallic gas line, but, I mean, if I'm digging with the sharpshooter, could I nick one of these gas lines and cause a leak? That just kind of scares me a little bit. But then again, I could be completely and totally wrong. I mean, these things might have a 100-year service period.
The problem you have with PVC, too, is it's made of plastic and... It deteriorates, too, just like everything else. So that stuff does not last forever. So, yeah, you're right. I would be scared.
I don't know, just like you said, like seeing a highway infrastructure. I mean, we're having problems with cheating Rick Perry, a couple of his great ideas. And one of the things that he'd done was, like, a lot of the new highway construction that was done in Texas, and a lot of it was sort of, like, staging phases for the failed Trans-Texas Corridor, too. I mean, basically, instead of, like, allocating the public funding out of, like, the general budget, you know, out of gasoline taxes, out of everything else, like, any road should be done, what Rick Perry did was like a couple of bypasses and highways, and a lot of them mirror, like the ones I'm thinking of basically mirror Interstate 35. So you can get around like Houston and Austin during rush hour if you're willing to pay the privilege of traveling on King Perry's roads. But he basically turned those, they were contracted to be done by a Spanish corporation named Cintas, I believe. And when I say Spanish, I don't mean Mexican, I mean Spain was basically going to be in charge of building, maintaining, and, like, collecting the money on this road. I mean, the other sweetheart deals that were done was a Mexican cell phone company was basically given the rights to provide the cellular infrastructure going along, like, a lot of these roads. And it's like those roads that were supposed to be privatized, I mean, that were privatized, that were eventually supposed to be, like, neutral things, it's like the Cintas can't make money on the ones that they have now. I mean, they're being horribly mismanaged, and, well, scandals like this are basically exactly why Rick Perry knows better. I mean, he thinks he's going to be president. I mean, good luck, Rick, especially with your idiotic last performance.
Well, I was going to say, we'll see who the GOP throws up for the next election. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Oh, and let me step off into politics, too, because I am one of his constituents. I mean, I'm from his district. But Ted Cruz, and here I go, I like starting to like dabble my feet into the whole Israel-Palestine thing, but it's like, all right, this is another thing in the news that went down that I love the way I paraphrase things, and I think they're rather accurate, if I do say so myself. But basically, okay, Hamas rocket lands by the airport in Israel, right? And as we've just found out, when you're in a war zone and projectiles are going through the air and it's dangerous to air traffic, as we've learned in Ukraine, it might be a little bit prudent to, you know, not fly to the place for a day or two till it comes off. So, you know, basically the FAA did that. We suspended flights to this one airport in Israel for a day, and they ended up extending it in 2 days. And, of course, it completely and totally went partisan. And this is basically what Ted Cruz said about it, Tea Party firebrand and everything that he, you know, maverick that he is, but he sure is up on Israel's nuts. That's not very Tea Party or libertarian to me. He basically said that Obama did this specifically as an economic sanction against Israel because, of course, obviously, he supports the terrorists of Hamas. And it's like, come on, dude. It's like, I don't like defending Barack Obama. There's not very much I can defend him about, but I've got to step up for the brother on this one. I mean, you know, declaring, I mean, basically trying to insinuate that the president is anti-Semitic and some kind of secret Muslim or something like that, that's just bad form, Mr. Cruz, bad form.
Well, not only that, but the whole Russia thing now is kind of, we're talking sanctions, and there's an RT article that talks about, with all the stuff going on, with us talking sanctions, it could spike oil to over $200 a barrel, which, you know, right now people are struggling at where gas is, you know. Imagine if it's above, I mean, here it's been hanging above 350 up to like 399, $4 for the past couple of months. So I would say the last 5 months or so. Imagine if it's over $4. So you're looking at 450, maybe $5 a gallon. People can't afford that. I mean, people are already broke.
You know, and when you take a look at gas prices too, it's kind of funny. I mean, just how much regulation there is and like the differences in gas prices. Like right here, I think I got gas for like $3.34 yesterday, the day before yesterday. And it's kind of weird just like, you know, getting on Interstate 45 and traveling up to here. And you can tell it gets really weird when you hit Dallas County because, I mean, gas is $3.30-something on one side of the county line. And you get up to Dallas County where they have to have, like, the different blends of gasoline for, like, various emissions purposes and whatnot. And they're using a more rarefied blend with extra additives into it, and the price of gasoline instantly jumps 20% at the county line. And it's worse than a lot of places. I mean, part of the reason California's gas, and probably your gas, is exceptionally expensive, too, is because there's so many different specialized and localized blends that, I mean, especially when the refineries have to go over to change their productions from summer and winter blends.
Well, and part of the reason why ours is expensive is I don't think Nevada doesn't have a refinery here. I think it comes in from California. So that's part of the reason why it's expensive.
Yeah, it's a little bit cheaper here because I'm only 3 hours from all the refineries on the Gulf Coast.
Yeah, and when I go back to Denver, it's cheaper too because there's a refinery in Denver that refines that stuff. So.
Yes, and of course, I mean, of course, like you said, Heather, I mean, the oil prices are already starting to go up just because of a lot of the speculation and. I don't know. A lot of these sanctions here in America, and I mean, UK's gotten in on it. The EU's thinking of like some trivial sanctions too. I mean, the sanctions that they're talking about Russia doing on Russia. I mean, they're not crippling. They're not crippling.
Oh
and
no,
here's
they're
the
not
big elephant
yeah.
in the room. Like, oh, it's not a guess. That's this is Heather, my co-host. She's hell. We're so good. I mean, I've got a co-host so smart. I don't need. I guess most of the time. But basically, oh, where was I? It's like, oh, shit, I lost it. Don't you hate it when that happens?
Yeah, when you're mid-thought and you lose it.
I know it had something to do about gas and oil, but...
Yeah.
This is yeah. You've come to know.
Well, and then not only that, but the other reason why stuff is going up, everything in the Middle East is so volatile right now. And everyone, you know, appears like they're fighting for no reason, but everything's over resources, over droughts and over water and over what's left of the oil. So everything, it may look like it's out of control and they're fighting, but they're fighting over water, oil, droughts, lack of food, lack of unemployment, high unemployment over there. So, of course, and like I said, we have the same issues here in the U.S. It could happen anytime here. Anytime. I don't know.
Oh, I remember where I was going. These trivial, like, slap-on-the-wrist Russian sanctions that everybody's saying is all big and scary, but nobody's really afraid. I mean, nobody's going to rock the boat here. I mean, look, if you wanted sanctions that would hurt Russia where they lived, I mean, there would be straight up, not sanctions on Gazprom's little spinoff bank. You would have sanctions on Gazprom. You would say nobody can do business with this company.
But the reason why the EU won't do it is because they're getting their gas from Russia.
Exactly.
And they don't want to cut off the hands that feed them either.
The EU can't shoot themselves in the head over this. I mean, I guess here in America, we have this idea that once Germany can't get any gas out of Russia anymore, that we're going to start floating container ships of LNG across the North Atlantic to them. I mean...
And that bubble is going to burst, too. The fracking, I'm telling you, the fracking I've read about and listened to it the last couple of years, that's a bubble that's going to burst. I'm telling you right now, that's not going to last. And everyone's going to wonder, oh, what happened? I don't understand. Well, they've been lying to you, you know, just like everything else. One more lie. I mean, you have to get past the people you need it. If you want to know what's going on, go research and listen to the people that really understand the issue. But do not buy the lies.
And you know what it's going to be like, right? And I was a little bit young to see it happen. I did live by... saw some of the aftermath of it in the 80s, but basically the end of the 70s and in the 80s when, you know, oil-rich Texas, the first time we dried up. I mean, especially around here, there used to be small refineries like oil rigs absolutely everywhere, but, I mean, they just, this conventional oil that was easy to get that they've been sucking out of the ground since, you know, basically the 20s. I mean, all that basically... dried up, and you saw communities and towns in Texas wither and dry. I mean, we went from, like, you know, big petrochemical dollars back to agriculture. And that's what happened in a lot of places, especially like here. And like you said, you're going to see the same thing once this fracking boom wears out. But it's not going to be a good 70-year run. It's not going to be a 50-year run.
From what I'm hearing, it's probably less than 5 years out. If
I've been
some of the insiders are correct.
you know, with all the, like, with everything we know about, and as we continuously tap it, I'd say that we could probably realistically ride this fracking train for another 20 years or so. But after
it's not 20 years. It's less than that. It's less than 10. It's between 5 and 10 years.
It probably is. I was just giving a really conservative estimate and benefit of the doubt in my projection. But
no, it's less than that. It's less than 10 years.
Yeah, rather sooner or later. I mean, regardless, you're going to see the same thing happen in Texas again. You're going to see the end of the oil boom happening, but we're not going to be able to go back to agriculture like we did because we are almost out of water when the fracking started and fracking's used the rest of it. So I guess, I mean, the Great Texas Desert, is that what we're going to be down to?
Yep, the never-ending drought.
I mean, yeah, here in East Texas, we've got an awful lot of groundwater, but, I mean...
Even that's drying up, too, from what I understand.
Well, yeah, and this has kind of surprised me. I mean, the Trinity River that Jeff's guest mentioned, the Trinity River bottom on the previous show, right before ours, as a good place for, like, Bigfoot to be around. But I don't want to go off into that tangent. But I cross the Trinity River every day, and, I mean, there's a floodplain right there. I mean, used to, it would rain 3 or 4 inches in a couple of days. The river would be out of its bank. Out of its banks in a day or two. I mean, we just had like 6 inches of rain over 2 days about a week and a half ago, and the river's still low. I mean, the stock ponds that we have on our little ranch, I mean, after 6 inches of rain, they should have been like flowing over the spillways, but they're not. I mean, they're not even full yet after a complete and total like unseasonal deluge.
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, and like I said, they're cutting off water next week here in Reno, and people, I mean, they keep saying, yeah, this is part of the 4 or 5 year drought. It's much longer. And things are getting, you think the weather's been wacky now, just wait. It's going to get worse. I mean, people won't know what to do, what to think, because it's going to get so wacky.
Yeah, well, Trace mentioned the Keystone XL pipeline in the room, and I don't know, I kind of look at that as pretty much a necessary evil because, well, I read another article about this. Basically, moving oil, the oil is going to be pulled out of the ground whether anybody likes it or not. There's going to be a demand for it, and it needs to get from point A to point B so it can be refined and used and distributed, right? Well, especially what's been going on in Canada because they seem to be where the majority of the derailments are. It's like, all of a sudden, railroads are back in business. I mean, just with the traditional freight that was going along them wasn't that much. But, I mean, now the rail traffic has increased something like 1,000% simply because of all this oil that's going back and forth on tanker cars. And it really seems like every week or two, there's another incident where one of those things derails and it's a big, nasty fire or something like that. And... unfortunately, I think we need this pipeline. I mean, it's a little bit...
Well, the only thing with the stuff coming from the tar sands is the energy returned on any energy invested on it, that's like, it takes so much energy just to get it out. You know, it takes so much water. You can look at pictures on what the tar sands actually look like in Canada. I mean, they've stripped away the forest. They've stripped away, you can see these big marshes, and it's just disgusting, of dirty water. It's polluting. You read about what it's done downstream. It's totally devastating the ecosystem up in Canada. And it's just devastating. If you look at what really is going on, we're destroying, yeah, we need the oil, but we're also destroying our ecosystem at the same time, you know?
Going back to the infrastructure, too, I mean, I'm not exactly thinking that newer pipelines are necessarily a bad idea because they're a necessary evil, and it's like most of the ones that we have, they're getting so old that, I mean, they're basically worn out. That's more infrastructure that we need to replace, or there are going to be major problems and major catastrophes just
then,
basically out of apathy.
Well, not only that, but what it's going to come down to is money. And if anyone has looked at our budget lately and how broke we are, everyone's broke. it's going to cost more money, which people are not going to have the money to replace and fix things. And things are just going to start falling apart or not getting repaired. I mean,
yeah.
I see people driving around town here in Reno that have dents on their cars that they can't. People don't have the money to get stuff repaired here in Reno. So if that's just the local economy, I mean, you look at the state governments. I mean, the governments are still broke, you know. I hate to say this, but Reno's turning, you see what's happening in Detroit? Well, Reno's turning into a smaller Detroit, and so is Oakland. You know, it's kind of scary what's happening, but we're becoming little Detroits.
No, it's kind of sad to see that happen, but I mean, that kind of is inevitable. I mean, Reno's basically lives off of the service industry, and when nobody's got enough money to be served, the service industry makes no money.
Well, yeah. I mean, and yeah, Vegas might be touting their gambling stuff, but it's going to be really hard when they have no electricity and no water. You know, people might laugh and not think about it, but I mean, if you have no, okay, what do we really need to live? If you get down to it, you need a roof over your head. You need food, you need water, right? If you just look at the basics, and you need somewhere to keep yourself from the shelter, you don't need that much to live, basically. And that stuff is gone, you know? I don't know.
See, the casinos might actually make a little bit of money off, you know, just their casino operation, because unfortunately I see it like this. It's getting bad enough that you're going to see more people turning to lottery tickets. I mean, especially people.
Oh, I know. I was down at one of the casinos earlier today with a friend. And, oh, yeah.
Well, somebody like taking their life savings and walking up to the roulette wheel and putting it all on black?
No. What I see is at one of them, they have a progressive jackpot, and one of them down at the Atlantis Casino. And it's always fun to go down there and watch and see the people play that. One night, I saw someone drop like $300 into that. Well, $300 in a $1 machine is pretty, you know, that's a lot of money, you know. And that thing, when I've played it, it doesn't pay out that often because it's a progressive, so the odds are high. So if it's a $10 million jackpot, you know, I've played it, I don't know, off and on. I occasionally hit, but I put money in there and lost everything. I'll play like just a 20, and just it'll eat the money. Bye-bye, you know, it goes, give it to the casino. And I always go in there with attitude of, you know, you only want a set amount of money and you want to play with them, that's it, you know. Because you see people, yeah, like you said, you see people in there. And who do I see in there? I see the grannies in there. I see these people. You're right, it's really interesting the crowds you get in these casinos playing.
Well, you know, the only thing that's worse than not having a casino is where people still feel that need for gambling. Well, like here in Texas, we pretty much keep like a lot of the boats in Louisiana and some of the casinos in Oklahoma in business because people in Texas just need to gamble. And, Well,
what's even funnier
I gotta tell a sad story. In places where you don't have casinos, I mean, hey, at least you get to go to a place and, if you like that kind of thing, have fun and revel in the environment. But this is a sad story. Here in Texas, when you don't have the casinos, you've got scratch-off lottery tickets. And like 12, 13 years ago, I used to work in a gas station. And the first of every month, the same older gentleman would come in. No, he'd come in at the third of every month with like $400 on him and $100 bills, you know, most of his disability or his social security check or whatever he was getting from assistance. And he would come in his first $100 bill, and I would take the entire thing from him on scratch-off lottery tickets. And that man would stay there all day until I took his last $100 bill. I mean, it's really, really sad. I mean, there's a joke out there that basically lotteries are a scheme for states to get their welfare checks back. And I'm sorry, this dude was playing completely and totally into it.
Testing. Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Back and forth. Man, this thing is really weird tonight, man. I was talking to y'all for like 10 minutes a while ago. Apparently, I hadn't said a word. Then I'm like, wow, y'all probably been getting double audio from something. Oh,
yeah, I thought I heard something. I was like, what the heck is that sound?
Because the mic was going mute, and then it was just, it's been one of those kind of nights tonight. What can you say?
It's sort of weird.
I was waiting for you to come back in so me and Heather could discuss this one. And, Therese, you'll find this one interesting, too, because we were talking about aerospace and space on your guys' show last week. But, Joe, man, have you been reading about how NASA's not going to have enough money to basically build their – and this is what gets me, Joe. It's called the SLS. the new heavy launch system. It's like SLS. What are they going to do, make an AMG version of it later that's faster?
I don't know, but I was thinking about NASA the other day because, you know, I got to think at this point, NASA's been getting its ass kicked, can't get any money, all kind of programs are going to hell in a handbag, half their dreams for Mars is going, then I got
to think. Here's the thing about the SLS. It ought to be a fairly impressive rocket, and I'm sure you've seen this one, that this one's basically like they're going back old school and they're making a big single stage Saturn V with two space shuttle solid rocket boosters on it. And let's see, it's like a, I don't know, it can carry a whole hell of a lot more than the shuttle. I mean, that's basically what it is. It's an old school Saturn V with two solid rocket boosters strapped on the side of it. And it can bring like 20 more times in, I mean, it can bring like, I think, honestly, like 8 to 12 times more payload than the space shuttle could bring up. I mean, that's something we need because, like, we pointed out the other day, since we might not be able to buy Russian rocket engines anymore, we don't even have any, like, geosynchronous or medium heavy lift capability. But, Joe, they only gave them $12 billion to come up with a replacement for the shuttle and the Saturn V.
But you know why, right? Because, was it Virgin? Not Virgin. The other one, what's the other one?
No, dude, SpaceX has the Falcon, Joe, but the Falcon is a light rocket, dude. It replaces the
rocket. But what they were saying was it was a $2.2 billion program and that they could develop a heavy lift for around 6. So they're thinking 12 is fine for NASA, but we forget NASA is a government-run agency. So what a normal private industry would do it for, NASA needs 3, maybe 4 times that. Let's just be honest.
Yeah, Joe, but look, dude, we need this launcher, dude.
But I don't know if we need it from NASA. We need a heavy – I agree. We need a good heavy lift launcher because of a lot of stuff that we have. I'm not arguing that fact because I agree 100%. I just think maybe we should give NASA some more money. And remember this, Jason, we're going to have Republican – Congress, either this time or next, and we're going to probably have a Republican president, they love giving NASA money. So NASA's going to get its money when they're there. Probably steal it from the poor people and give it to them, but they're going to give NASA their money.
No, dude, not really, Joe, because, you know, everybody that talks about cutting the budget, NASA's on the first of the cutting block. Republicans don't want to spend no money on science.
No, Republicans do like science.
Republicans want to spend no money on NASA because he wants to give out more Obama phones. You just can't win.
Well, no, the Republicans like space science because they can say they're reaching for God. It's a good thing for them, man. It really is. They've been doing it for decades. I've been watching them, and they play it off like that when they're in their local districts. You know, they do it. It's really good for them, and it works for them. And as long as NASA gets the money, I don't give a shit what they're saying. I got to be honest with you.
Yeah, Joe, but NASA's not getting the money. I mean, come on, dude, $12 billion? They probably spent that much developing the ejector seat on the F-35, man. I mean, come on.
That's the whole point. They're spending way too much money. We have now watched 5 private industries, 3 of which have already put spaceships in space in less than 3 years. It took NASA 10 years and God knows how much money to develop the space shuttle. And
that
frankly,
makes a difference, Joe, but the cronyism is not going away, though, dude. I mean, SpaceX tried to go to court so they could have the right to bid on some government launches, and court was like, no.
That's
scratching each other's back.
That's somebody scratching.
Elon Musk is having a hard time getting.
But
this is ridiculous.
Bigelow, I know Bigelow's got a shot at the heavy lift contract because he's got something to do with the second location or whatever the hell they call it, that spaceport thing they're building. And,
yeah, Joe, Bigelow's part of the Launch Alliance, man. I mean, he's part of the old school. He doesn't want the boat rock.
Well, no, he wants this. He's already talked about it a couple times on TV, so I know he wants it. Bigelow, I know Bigelow's got some creepy characteristics, but you know what? Anybody who could start out, what was he, in a hotel business and get into what he does now in aerospace and get himself to where he is in aerospace, you got to give the man some props for that. And he does have a good, solid aerospace business that's developing good products. And you know what? Virgin the other day said, within 10 years, you'll be able to go to space for less than 2 Gs. He said, maybe even less than a G. He said, it's going to become quite commonplace.
Yeah, Joe, but I'm about to shoot your entire Bigelow argument in the dick right here.
Just don't like Bigelow.
Bigelow can't be very smart because he gave a bunch of money to MUFON and lost it.
Yeah, I know. He got it back. That was the whole problem. That was the whole problem. That's why MUFON got in trouble because they audited MUFON. Bigelow said, well, I gave you like 60 Gs, which I've been doing with it. You've been going, getting cases and flying out to California and buying high screen this and this, that, and the other thing. Bigelow's like, and I still remember because James Carrion wrote, he said, oh, no. He said, they were giving me a salary. He said, but I actually returned to whatever it was, the $3,300 a month or whatever they were giving him. He actually returned all of the money, didn't keep any of it. But, of course, the rest of MUFON, who was just, basically gallivanting around on Bigelow's money, he got pissed. And he took his money. I mean, he left. He cut him out. And you can't. I mean, he gave him a shot. He should have gave us a shot. At least he might have got something. But there was never a shot he was going to get anything in MUFON. MUFON doesn't go anywhere that they would get real material. They're not dealing with contactees. They're dealing with lights in the sky. You're not.
Oh, I know, man. It makes you wonder what kind of crack is the Science Channel smoking. I mean, they're giving MUFON TV shows and crap, and they haven't even looked and see what MUFON actually does and how bad they've screwed shit up.
Ratings. And I'm going to tell you this, Jason. I've been told this 100 times. I've been told by at least 6 different TV people, if you just put something together, you could probably put it on TV. He said, because a lot of them listen to us. A lot of them like the stuff we do. It's just, and I've sent y'all copies of emails and the people copies of the emails we get. But it's almost always British TV. Almost always. There's 2 or 3 Americans that have offered. And I've managed to get myself on Sci-Fi twice now. So we could do it. It's just, frankly, I couldn't figure out how to squeeze in the time to really come up with something that would be that. Let me put it another way. I don't really have the time to come up with something that we would all consider to be good.
I could do a great program, dude. And the budget was
fun. Y'all know that you should put together a demo. Look, I'll pull all them old emails I give y'all. We'll send that shit off by the tons. All right, ding dong. Who's ding donging me, man? Look, don't be ding donging me while I'm talking on the air. I'll get another ding dong just because I said that.
That's just rude, man.
I know. Well, you know what happened today? I told you about that new Asus pad and phone, right? So today I'm coming out of Capital One. Lady hits me and sends my phone sailing. I'm like, oh, shit. And I knew, dude. It went too high. I knew it was going to happen. I'm like, this phone ain't even a month old. So now, right now, the phone, because it turns my pad into a quad-core computer, is plugged into the pad.
Yeah, Joe, but, dude, we could do TV. We could do TV, man. Hell, we could get Asus. Dude, as much as you've been talking about Asus, you could get them to sponsor us. Hell, they probably owe you that much by now.
They probably do. It's
just imagine.
You are a ding dong.
You get a big four wheel drive SUV with like clear cameras and computers and touch screens and crap. It can be me, both of the Jennifers, and a cameraman. That's all we need.
Two of the Jennifers and a cameraman. They
one of those Amex Black cards for like expenses. That's what. I can spend your money, Sci-Fi, and I am cheap on it too.
There's so much stuff. They really do want things. Like, we've been asked at least. I know one time I had Christina go through the stuff on the abduction page. I had Jean go through it. I know November's been through it. Erica's just recently been through it. And that's not even the Homestead stuff. But a lot of times we get asked for stuff like, let's follow your contactees around. Problem here is when I approach the people I would like to see, they're kind of like, yeah, bite me, Joe. And even if I tell them they're going to get a check, they're like, it ain't worth it. Because, a lot of them have jobs and families. It's just not worth it to them. And I can understand that. So, anything else is just a UFO show, which is hundreds of, which are, frankly, we all agree are boring. Even, I said this 100 times. At this point, with all the television and all the media, the ufology world should be blossoming. We should have a huge following all around the world. There's more people here now than there was in 1960, and the following was bigger then than it is now.
Yeah, Joe, but I'm less pragmatic about it, man. I think the UFO alien paranormal market, dude, it's already tapped out, dude. It's saturated. I mean, it will never get any bigger than that.
No, it's got to get bigger. I mean, it's just... I can tell you what the problem is. One, the good old boys network.
It's not like they're going to be starting chapters in Uzbekistan and they're going to be like listening to Paranormal Radio Network over there anytime in the near future.
Actually, they do listen to us in Pakistan, by the way, my friend. Listen to us in Iran, too, by the way.
Joe, if I was in Pakistan, I wouldn't be listening to the Paranormal Radio Network.
Yeah, we definitely have, you know what, dude,
the drone attacks and drone attacks
honestly,
on one hand, the Taliban on the other side.
I honestly think he's trying to stay alive
to listen to this paranormal crap.
I honestly think it's got to be like American soldiers or something. It might be Pakistan. I know we listen to an Iran, too. I don't think there's no countries in the Middle East we're not listening to somebody, but there was somebody the other day I noticed, was it not Syria, Algeria, some little country. We have one listener. Solid one listener. But look, they solid. They there every day, man. They listen every day. Whoever you are out there, thank you for listening. I don't know who you are, but...
And how many people do we have listening to us in Israel? Because I'm about to piss y'all off.
Israel, we're picking a decent audience. I'd have to go look to see right now. But Israel can be anywhere from 50 to 600 or 700 people. I've seen it up as high as around 3,500, 4,500 listeners, which is a lot to Israel. I mean, because, come on, it's a solid religious community. Frankly, that we got any listeners there, it's freaking amazing to me.
Let me start off and preface it this way. And this is basically my whole pragmatic, jaded view of the Middle East. From, you know, just, and it's kind of a facetious point of view, but I believe it still has a few cogent points that, look, this land, this holy land that everybody wants, it's been everybody's land at some point. I mean, it's like territory in a football game. It's been taken over by a different team so many times, it's not even funny. Basically, all throughout recorded history. And from the simplistic point of view, it's like, why should anything change? It's like, all right, old school world point of views, if you are badass enough to go in, take a place, and hold it, and stay there, then, you know, fine. But, I mean, what exactly are you going to expect about it? It's like, look, Israel went in and took the place, they've held it since then, and they're the dominant military force in our region. You know, be that as it may.
And they're stealing all the resources.
But they are. They are. And, I mean, it's just, especially with, like, a lot of the American, I mean, unabashed support that Israel gets from America. All right, I'm kind of getting off tangent a little bit. But, yeah, basically, they took the place and they're holding it. But you kind of have to look at it like this from the goddess's perspective. It's like, okay, the whole Holocaust, you know, never again, they deserve their own homeland and everything. I'm not even going to get into any of that crap. And there's probably people that are out there that are calling me both a Jew hater for about to be critical about Israel. And there are people that are calling me a Jew lover, Zionist pig, because I'm not calling for their destruction and for them to be pushed out into the sea. You know, I'm basically not like that. But, I mean, look at it from the Palestinian perspective, and this is kind of how I see it. When I see the people in Gaza and I see the people in the West Bank, I see the Native Americans of here. I mean, I basically...
Oh, yeah, exactly. They're destroying them and getting rid of them and killing them, and, yeah.
Basically,
the same thing as the Native Americans.
Control their movement and are more or less treating them like shit. And it's like, look, war is bad, okay? Nobody should be shooting anybody at each other. And I've got some criticism about Hamas with y'all stupid little rocket attacks. I mean, you're strategically doing nothing but being a thorn in your side and making yourself idiots. If you actually want to hurt Israel, they've got Iron Dome. Why are you tossing a rocket here and a rocket there that's probably going to get intercepted, like, probably a 90% chance in the first place anyway? No, what you do is, you idiots, hold on to all of your rockets, and you try to saturate one zone of the Iron Dome defense, sacrifice a few birds so the most of them get, more of them get through. First off, y'all need to, look, you either need to, like, quit fighting or, like, bring it and mean it. I mean, this tit-for-tat stuff is stupid. All you are doing is, like, poking the giant in the face and getting lots of your people killed. I don't know, Joe, what do you think? I mean, it's just a mess, dude.
It's been a mess.
I mean, the same shit has been going on my entire life.
It's because you know, I know this was before you were born, and actually before I was born, damn. But basically, you know, the Palestinians, well, everybody in the Middle East pretty much said once Israel became a state, there it was their job to wipe the Zionist pigs from the face of the planet. And it's been like that ever since. I mean, now some of the countries seem and maybe you think they might be able to work some stuff out with Israel and maybe see this. But, you know, frankly, it's only because they're all preoccupied trying to kill each other right now. Now when they all get to be friends again, they'll all be hating even more in Israel. I think Israel needs to do what it needs to do, but I don't think it needs to rely on us to save its ass if it gets in a bind in the Middle East.
Man, I just saw this article, and, man, I got to get into the press coverage about it, too, because it's... Oh, man, I'm not even
You know what, Jason? Why don't we send them a dozen F-35s and let them work the frickin' bugs out over there? They need them in combat. I mean, it'd be a good place to see them in combat, see how they perform, see what kind of crappy problems they got before the Russians exploit them or the Chinese exploit them in a real fight, you know?
No, dude, it'd make it a little bit more fair if we gave Gaza some F-35, you know, some of the VTOL variants, like...
Geez. The F-22, just to screw with the F-35, since it's such a better plane than the F-22 is.
Well, Joe, you've seen Vladimir Putin start to make overtures. Now, it's like... Ooh, now Putin's kind of getting into the whole peace in the Middle East process, and I think
well,
the
you
game.
See what happened? I don't know if you've seen this.
That happens.
Well, I don't know if you've seen this the other day. It's just one of the stories I ran, and I'll be talking about it again tomorrow. But Putin had to get in front of the Soviet Congress and tell the whole country, "No, the United States is not trying to do an invasion on Russia and China." Apparently, and I didn't know this until like 2 weeks ago, apparently the Russian media for the last 6 months has been saying the United States, they've been prepping their people for war, basically, saying that we were coming to invade, we were doing this in Ukraine, we were pumping soldiers and stuff into Ukraine, and we were trying to put NATO there, and we were getting all our NATO forces together. And I'm thinking, I know there's an internet in Russia. Couldn't these idiots go look on the web and see that we don't even give a shit what's going on here? Our president's out at fundraisers, man. Give a shit what's going on over there, man. I mean, come on. He made the pregnant woman wait to cross the line while he's going to fundraiser while we're blowing up stuff in the Middle East. I'm thinking, look, he's not worried about y'all. It's one of them dumb things.
Well, yeah, but you got to expect that kind of shit coming out of the Russian media, dude. I mean, come on, man. Russia,
well, I know it's
the great state again. They're still looking at us as like the greatest threat to their existence. I mean,
but the thing of it is, you know, I know. You know, it's funny right now. Putin wants to be a cross between the Soviet Union and 1950s America. When you listen to him talk, he does sound like a guy straight out of 1950s America. His attitude on women, his attitude on gays, his attitude on the world in general, he really does feel to me to be stuck in that era. And maybe that's where he feels the most comfortable. Or maybe that's just his state of moral values, and that's the morals he wants to inflict on his country.
He wants to go back to the Cold War glory days, dude. A lot of the assholes I see on TV talking about it, too, they're talking, we need to roll tank divisions back into Eastern Europe. And
I don't think we need to have tanks in Europe, man. Come on, now. First off, Europeans got enough. Europeans got some badass tanks. I think they could hold Russia long enough to... We got over there because China got nothing but garbage. So I think they could hold Russia until we got over there, or until the Australians or the Indians got over. But anyway it goes, somebody get over there to save their asses. Nobody's going to let Europe go down because they're the second largest economic power besides us, and we ain't letting them go nowhere.
Yeah, but India's not ever going to throw in against Russia, dude.
Oh, yeah, they will. Let me tell you what. India is still a commonwealth. Don't ever forget this. And Indians are funny about this. I know a lot of Indians. They're funny about this. They are still loyal to the queen. Don't ever think they're not. They were showing this just the other day. There was a poll done in Mumbai. If India was called to war for the UK, it was like an 88% response said yes, they would go without any question.
Right, Joe, go down to Quickie Mart and ask the dude behind the counter. And tell
he's an American. That don't count. Fight knows better. He's an American, Jason. American Indians. And wait a minute. This is going to get confusing for a second. When I say American Indians at the moment, people, I don't mean Native Americans, okay? I mean Indian people that moved to India, from India to the United States, that are Americanized. Oh, hell no. They're not going to fight for the queen. Be lucky if they fight for us, man. No, they've been Americanized. They're smarter than the rest of them. But, no, it was funny because I was with you on this, by the way. I would have figured because of the way they were treated all those years and all the shit they stole from them and all of being kicked in the balls for, what, 300 years, that maybe India would have had enough of the UK. But apparently, for some reason, in a lot of areas, they're still held in high regard. And because for some Indians, especially the middle class and up, they feel like they brought something to India. And I was surprised by that. I got to be honest with you. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, but
it
not
caught me off guard.
People feel that. Nah, dude. There's still a lot
not
of...
Not Indians, but the people in control feel that way, and that's all that really matters. The people with the power and the money feel like that, and they like their close ties, because Russia will never have the money that the... Well, shit, I don't know if they'll have the money that the UK has, but they'll never have the money that the EU.
No, dude, I was just watching a documentary about the Indians that live in Fiji, and, man, it was absolutely ridiculous, dude, because here's what England straight up did, dude. They became indentured servants, and India was basically treating them like slaves, dude. It was slavery, no matter what type of label you try to put it on.
They
put them on a plantation in Fiji.
Let me tell you what, if they think they can still have slavery, that's what they're going to try to pull off. And by the way, I hate to say it, because somebody said Brits only enslave black people. Oh, no, that's not true. Just in case you didn't know that, there was tons and tons of white indentured servants and the Brits. Trust me on this, guys.
Oh, yeah, I was hearing
lots of Europeans, yeah.
Here in the U.S.
Yeah, don't ever think it was just blacks. I mean, there was a lot of them. I don't want to take anything away from the blacks, but, I mean, don't ever think it was just the blacks. Oh, no. The Brits had no qualms on who could be a slave. It was more of a money status thing than it was. If you were poor, you were running the risk of being a slave. That's all I can tell you.
The British Empire changed with just their, like, plain God and empire building, dude. I mean, Jamaica used to just be an island with a few natives on it. I mean, now it's full of Jamaicans, simply thanks to Britain. And I have nothing wrong with Jamaican. Hey, I think I have been Jamaican in the past life.
I can see Jason with Jamaican. Yeah, man. I'm sorry, y'all. I apologize. I could just see you out there, bro, with the dreads and the big spliff and shit. Sitting on a dog, man. Yeah, what's happening? Oh,
well,
goes now, aside, scratching her in the head.
Well,
oh, wait. Come on, Ding-a-ling. Who's ding-a-linging me again? Don't be a ding-a-ling. Ding-a-ling. Ding-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling-a-ling. I don't know. Y'all, getting back to Putin, because he's something else, man. You see what they're trying to do, his daughter, they're protesting outside of her house wearing the Netherlands and shit. They want her deported from the country. They want her gone. They're like, what's her name? Oh, what was her name? Gloria, no. It was just like some American, I think it was Gloria Putin. Or Maria Putin, something like that.
She didn't actually look that bad, although...
No, she's big, tall, blonde, man.
I'd still be scared of her, though, you know?
Well, yeah, because her daddy's Putin. I wouldn't even go to where... Look, I wouldn't even go around a girl. Just because if you just even offended her, you know, remember, y'all remember the term cement galoshes? I think Putin's old school. You might get a pair dropped off in the Baltic Sea or something. Buddy, I ain't going there. Hell with that. That'd be like messing with Papa Doc's kid, man. We ain't going there. But she was pretty, and apparently she's dating a rich guy because they're in a really, really rich neighborhood over there, and you know, pretty much. But they want her gone. It's her fault. I'm thinking, really? Come on, the girl's engaged to some guy. She's hanging out. She can't make her daddy do nothing. Apparently, mama.
Shit, dude. I have no shame, dude. I would do it. I would climb her like a tree. I would get all up in that like Hitler got up in Russia in World War II. Okay, did you know how awesome that would be being Vladimir Putin's stepson?
You'd be a cement hip boot, buddy. Oh, man.
No, no, dude, I'd be cool with Vlad. I mean, I would be cool with Vlad. Dude,
no,
I could count my American citizenship. I'd be out there climbing 29s for fun and shit.
Well, he might like you because he might actually be taller than you, Brian. You know how he is, man. He's funny about his height, dude. He really is. He got the Mikey syndrome, man. Bad. That day I seen him, I'm thinking he's up on that horse in his shirt, and I'm like...
Yeah, there you go, Chipmunk. Jason Wilson is filing for divorce with Vladimir Putin's daughter.
Now he has not been seen.
He got cancer. He died.
No one has seen
nothing
him.
To see here. Move along.
Coincidentally, Putin just got a new lion.
and seems to be fact. I don't know. It's kind of funny, but I'd stay away from it. Now, Russia, though, I don't know what he's thinking. You know, the other day, one of his billionaires, who was in Europe at the time, leaked something to the press about the billionaires in Russia are really, 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 really nervous right now, because if Europeans and America decide to hit him on a second round of sanctions, Russia's done. I mean,
yeah, Joe, but they already tried to do that. That's what that whole, like,
takeover
of Cyprus was, dude. They decided that they were going to hit Russia where they basically launder all their money through.
Not like this. This is actually hitting Russia, and not just in that. They're talking about dropping fuel subsidies from Russia and picking them up from the Middle East again. They're talking about a lot of nasty things that we're
doing.
They're
not going to do that, Joe. The Middle East.
They weren't going to do it. But now they probably are, because once the plane got shot down by a Russian missile, now they found out that Russia's shooting missiles are being shot from Russia into the Ukraine, shooting down fighters. And then now there's
bullshit, Joe. You can't say who shot down what. I think
I can pretty much say that the American government can tell you who shot that plane down. And
YouTube evidence? I mean, come on.
Even Putin, no, dude, we got spy satellites all over the damn place. Don't not think we didn't know what the hell hit that plane.
And we better come out with
bitch launched, you can bet your ass. One of them radar systems in Europe picked that shit up, or one of us eye in the skies, they knew exactly what that was. Because when the president was talking, they even knew where the damn thing was. There's no doubt we knew it. We probably, what really sucks, Jason, and this is a really sucky part, guarantee you, we knew it was there days before this happened. Days. Guarantee you we knew it days. And then the guy came out, well, the guys already came out, one of the leaders have already came out and admitted it's a Russian missile. One of the rebel leaders over there, he's already came out and admitted it was a Russian missile, so that's not even an argument anymore.
No, he hasn't. Nobody has talked to it, Joe.
It's on Yahoo. It's been on Yahoo for 3 days. You go look it up yourself. He actually is one of the Russian leaders. He's in the second province, and he just came out.
And he's not even clear when you're calling it a Russian missile. Yeah, it was a Russian missile. All of those missiles were built by Russia. Ukraine had a shitload of them, dude.
Yeah,
there's other credible evidence on the pro-Russian side that this missing missile launcher that they're saying Russia smuggled in, it's unit number 317, and people have, like, pictures going back for, like, 2 or 3 years that 317 was a Ukrainian military unit.
Well, the Americans verified that the Ukrainians had no working missile launches in those areas, and Russia did too, by the way.
Joe, that is so much shit. You know,
Russia said it too. Russia already said this. Look, even Putin is going to – he's already to the point where they're going to have to take responsibility for this. Anyway, it goes – even from the radar data now, it looks like it either came from right there or – and now they're saying maybe even from inside of Russia. So it's looking bad for the Russians. It's just looking
bad.
No, you
can't believe anything.
And then you've got this leader – you've got the leader from the rebel group coming forward and saying and talking about it. He's very blunt about it. He's very open about it. He talks about the thing in great deal. He even tells you what the missile was. He even tells you it was brought back. And wait, both the Ukrainians and the Americans verified the thing being brought back into Russia. So
Joe,
now
yeah,
you've got well,
Joe,
no, now you've
like,
got
Joe, there is like absolute there is like absolute like crap coming out. You can't believe anything coming out of this.
I think they knew exactly where this missile launcher was. I think they knew.
Well, Joe, here's one myth that got like completely and totally disproved. It's like everybody was running the media story that it's like, oh, once they got the black boxes from Russia, there was proof that it's bullshit that came out of Ukraine. They said that the black boxes had been tampered with. Well, the Malaysians got the boxes back and gave it to the Dutch. The Dutch said the boxes are intact. They've never been opened. So, I mean, that was one myth and rumor that got shot down. I mean, and most of it's stupid, dude. I mean, most of it's complete.
One of the ones that I liked that is probably closer to the truth, because when the rebel leader was talking about this, he said this probably had happened to the same guy that said that they had the launcher. He said that the Ukrainians knew the missile launcher was there. And that morning they had started running missile strikes in the areas of hostiles. Americans also verified that the Ukrainians were having flights that day launching the hostile targets. He also said that he thought that maybe the Ukrainian may have been being escorted by Ukrainian fighters across the territory. He said probably what really happened was is they were probably trying to shoot the fighter. The fighter seen it came and it jetted off, and the damn thing just hit the passenger liner. And it's probably what actually really happened. Because
yeah, Joe, that makes it a huge conspiracy, dude. If that plane was being – I've heard those rumors, too, that if the plane was being escorted by Ukrainian fighters, that explains one thing about it, Joe, because, I mean, you can go to the flight tracking sites and look up MH17 till its last flight. And, dude, they all went, like, a few hundred miles to the south of this, and only that one on that day went directly over the middle. So if Ukrainian air traffic was guiding it over the war zone, there's something fishy as shit there, dude.
Actually, no, that was the planned flight path. They've already verified that, too, for some reason. What I don't understand is if there was Ukrainian fighters there, why didn't they take it outside of that planned flight path, outside of hostile territory? Because I have now heard this from four different sources that everyone knew this launcher was there. The Russians, the Americans, the Europeans, and the Ukrainians all knew it was there. My thing is, why didn't we just go take it out? You know, not us, but why didn't the Ukrainians? If they were doing sorties anyway, why didn't they just go take this damn launcher out? So I got to be honest with you. I think the Ukrainians were hoping for this.
Launched out with is an Su-25, and that's what's been getting shot down over. Hell, Russia gave like five of them to Iraq already, which is kind of funny.
I told this to people in the beginning this was going to happen like this. And, see, Putin should have been smart here because really and truly.
See, Tom, hang on. The Su-25 is basically Russia's version of a tank killer. It was basically their A-10. In fact, they're the only country that still makes a dedicated ground attack craft like that. Everybody else is just building little multi-role fighters. But, I mean, that's probably why so many of them have been shot down because, I mean, dude, that's what. Yeah, I mean, those missile systems can eat those planes for lunch, dude. No wonder
it's an instinct that guides us, a passion for performance.
Planes, anyway, but I said in the beginning because somebody said, "Oh no, it had to be the rebels or them." I said, "No, no over shoulder launcher shot this thing down. It was too high, 32,000 feet. You got to have actually a real missile."
Yeah, and, now one of those is SU-25 for lunch. I mean,
yeah. So now we knew. That there's real missiles involved, and it's not a bad missile. It's not, you know, it's not all that bad of a missile. Apparently, it shoots down passenger planes and fighters pretty good. So, the problem really is here is there's no doubt this is going to turn out to be from the Russian rebels and from this. I don't care what anybody tries, this is going to get blamed on the Russians. So that's I don't know how it's going to react. And Putin now, ever since he got up the other day and showed that when he got up and made that speech about no, we're not at war with the Americans and they're not trying to invade our country, it shows there's a problem there. And now as billionaires, he's in a precarious situation.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Joe, that launcher was a Ukrainian government launcher. And Joe, your information.
No. They're pretty much guaranteed this. This was given to them. Not just this. The guy was pretty clear about this too. These were trained Russian troops. These weren't just rebels. He said start off with, the average rebel couldn't launch a missile off that if his ass and life depended on it.
Oh, yeah, there's no doubt about that. I mean,
they said there was no doubt.
They have Spectres in their operating, dude. I mean, these weren't a bunch of rednecks, like, doing some kind of uprising.
This is the Russians did this. Whether it's, people be clear about this. I'm not saying Putin authorized this or even said to do this. This is an unfortunate accident for him. It's going to turn out to be his people and his armory, and even if it's not his equipment, it's still his people that pull the trigger. Anyway it goes, he's getting blamed for this. So for him,
look at what's happened. There have been a number of airliners that have been shot down over history, dude, but nothing has ever happened because.
No, there's not going to be a war over this. No.
No, I mean, come on, Joe. We like the USS Vincennes, like, smacked that Iranian Airbus A300 out of the sky in 1988, and the only thing that happened was they took us to world court, and we paid them $61 million.
And that's pretty much what's going to happen here. This is going to be a terrible accident. Putin's going to get on the thing and say, well, he's still going to deny it, but he's going to say, well, since this evidence points out, I'm still saying it's not us, but if he loses his suit, his country's going to pay. And he don't want to make, you know, break with enemies with the Netherlands or anything, so he wants to stay in good standings with them, which is the ones with the majority of the kills. And by the way, the rebel that I'm talking about, Jason, that talks about the launcher, is the same guy who turned over the tapes. The one that turned over the tapes to the Norwegian government, he's the one I'm talking about. He's the one that said it was a Russian launcher that they had been given. So I don't, like I said, I don't doubt this was the Russians. I just don't think it was Russia. I don't want people to get the wrong idea. I think Putin's hoping that the Ukraine falls apart and he can go in there, but I don't think Putin's wanting to start World War III.
Well, Joe, Ukraine was already falling apart.
I know, that's the point.
The government was going to fall apart any damn way, dude. Didn't their prime minister just resign?
Yeah, they did. He did, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, the government, he just resigned. Yeah, you're right. But that's happening all over, I think, in...
You know, he might be the smartest man.
He's got someone else also.
He said, I don't want any of this shit.
Well, you can't really blame him. I mean, this is a disaster going on over there. But, you know, Russia needs a respect.
In this bag is 150 years of Swedish experience in perfecting the rich, never-bitter taste of Jugoslavia. We do it all for this very experience.
I know, right?
NATO from getting the foothold
Jugoslavia.
Ukraine, and it worked. We're not going to bring him into NATO now. So it affected what he wanted. He took the port back, which is what he wanted, and NATO said, well, you know, we can't let you in.
Yeah, and that just makes NATO look weak as shit. Wasn't NATO supposed to, like, exist to prevent that from taking? I mean, come on, man. Yeah.
NATO should at least said, okay, well, look, since they came in and did what they did, then you know what? We're going to bring you into NATO. We're going to fold you into the line. We're going to make you part of NATO. We're going to start putting troops on the borders there, of course, which would just freak Russia out beyond belief. And Putin is a little on the paranoid side, you know.
If I was Putin, I would have considered it a win after Crimea and...
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
He's now, though, in a bad place, and the sanctions are hurting him. I've heard now a couple of times from the different banks and now from these billionaires coming out, even the little sanctions are starting to hurt Russia. Russia doesn't have the kind of money the United States has to bankroll itself. Even with China, and China's now in an economic little disaster itself, so it really don't have the extra money to be dumping into Russia right now. So, you know, they can't really
afford. We don't have the money to support our family.
Yeah, we don't have the money either.
Talking about, we got more money we know to do.
No, we don't.
Listen, y'all really do.
In the last two years, we have to print like $1 million.
Everyone owes everyone money.
No, because that's not how it works. Who do we owe money?
No, the only reason we're going is because we can print money.
No, but who do we owe money to? We owe $15 trillion, but who do you actually owe that to? We owe $500 billion to China. You know what the rest of it's owed? To the United States, to the Social Security funds, to all the other funds. So
yeah, which is one big Ponzi.
So the point is we're not actually $14 trillion in debt. We've just spent money that we had in surplus. We're not actually in debt. We're just spending our children's futures is what we're doing. But we're not actually physically in debt at all. So we still have all of our
$14 trillion
and all of our oil and everything else. The United States is a very – just in minerals, the United States is one of the wealthiest countries on the planet. We've got a
big –
Yeah, and we won't
be able to extract them because it's going to be too expensive.
Actually, you know where we'll set ourselves apart, right, is with food. That's the United States.
What food?
The United States is one of the biggest exporters
with
of food.
The drought that's going on in California when we're going to have no water and can't grow anything? Is that drought?
California is easy to bring water to. There's a whole Pacific Ocean out there.
And desalination
is
more expensive. We don't have the money
I could use. It's not. Thanks to the Middle Easterns, it's not that expensive anymore. If I remember, I think Cali's building 6 desalination plants, actually. And I think that Nevada said they're going to actually pay for one to have water sent straight to Nevada.
Yeah, but like any other...
Yeah, but that's broke. There's no way. That's not going to happen.
And actually, wait a minute. And this is the better part about this, that Jeremy West guy, that global warmest nut, he said that if we did this on both our coasts and we made everybody do this on this coast, it would effectively edge the raising of the water around the planet because we'd be pulling all that water in and putting it in the land and letting it absorb it. And I'm not kidding y'all about this. So... Now he's saying, now they're saying desalination is going to be cheaper, and it will help save the environment. It's going to happen now.
Physics really well, because in my book, when I took geology and physics, that doesn't work.
But that don't matter. It sounds good.
Geology and physics.
But listen.
Yeah, Joe, don't listen to the woman who's got a master's degree specializing in this. No.
Actually, the thing about it is if you're going to pump, I would imagine if you put 200 desalinization plants around the world, and right now as it stands right now, you could probably drop the ocean by a good 2 inches, maybe three. And if you really did it to start, like, irrigating massive fields and shit, I bet you could drop it more than that.
Yo, I mean, do you have any idea how much energy it would cost to pump water over the Sierra Nevadas into Vegas, dude? That's retarded.
Yeah, they ain't going to take that much money. Once it's going, it's going. It's like a giant straw. Once you get it sucking, it's going to go through.
Have you transcended science and physics and you're now making water run to kill?
Do not forget that I used to work at one of the plants down here. I know exactly how these things work. That's why they build airtight systems. And they put a pump on each end, one pushing, one pulling. And that's all it takes. It's not even doesn't even take that much energy to, you know, you got to build a pipeline, but once it's built, it's built. And poof, there it goes. It's like a little choo-choo train going down the road, baby. I've seen it a million times. Remember, I used to run the x-ray machine. I used to go check the wells. It's,
Jason
forgot about this. Right now, Louisiana and Texas are in a massive battle on who's going to build the desalination plant and start selling water to New Mexico and to Arizona. And on top of that, because Louisiana wants to put a pipeline from the Mississippi River to New Mexico, Texas is having a shit fit.
No, that's ridiculous pipe dreams, dude. There's no reason for desalination in Louisiana and Texas because we've got so much water flowing into the damn Gulf already, it's not even funny.
I know, but that's what they're saying. They're going to divert from Orange, Texas. They're going to divert, I forgot how many billions of gallons it was, and they said they were going to divert X amount of billions of gallons from the river and X amount from the Atchafalaya Basin. So, yeah, that would produce a shitload of fresh water for Arizona, New Mexico, Colorado, places like that. But Texas Emperor you got and the Indian King got together and decided that if they're going to do this, if they can get the funding, because they're going to see the feds and see if they can get the funding, if they can get the funding, they figured they should either do a joint desalinization or two smaller ones to actually help bring in more water so that they could get it in at a faster rate. Because there's something about we can only build so big of a pipeline from this area as we'd have to come this way, so they want to put a plant because for some reason – I guess Lower Texas doesn't have any fresh – Lower East – West Texas don't have any water in it, I guess. And so that's one of the reasons they were talking about it. What's going to actually end up happening is Louisiana and Texas probably in about 15 years will come to a deal where we build a pipeline from Lafayette, Louisiana, through Orange, Texas, straight across the state into New Mexico, probably with what you know the pitfalls they do where the water drops out into a sand pit and filters through for a while and then it's picked back up and drawn. So this way, not only will you get good water, but it will all be pre-purified before it even gets to its location. It's a great plan.
They're going to have to do some shit like that because there simply isn't water.
That's what I'm saying. So this is going to happen no matter what.
That's not hard of a pipeline to build, though. I mean, it's not really going up that much elevation.
No, it's not. And once it gets to New Mexico, Texas and Louisiana will probably just sell it to New Mexico and let them deal with sending it to Nevada and Arizona and other places. You know, let them do the offset cost. Or we'll say, look, we'll bring it here, and this is what we're going to charge you to get it here. And you've got to build Arizona. You've got to build your own pipeline. You know, Nevada, you got to build your own damn pipeline. Because, frankly, Texas, East Texas and all of Louisiana, we got enough water. We could all four of them states, man. We could flood them bitches and still have water left over, man. Let's be honest. Just what flows out the Mississippi River is enough to just pretty much flood all five of them states like they're nothing.
Yeah, man, but you know that water's still not going to be cheap, though.
Yeah, desalination is one of the most expensive waters.
But Jason, we're talking about pumping it out of the estuaries and pumping it west.
Just looking at the recurring cost of just maintaining the pipeline and all that pumping equipment.
I would figure initially probably $1.75 a pint or something, but I would think after a while it would drop down to probably around 50, 55 cents. So it's not going to be cheap. I mean, if you're buying, let's say if you were at the other end and you wanted to get a bottle of water, it'd probably
be cheap. Damn, Joe, you're trying to sell some Avion through this pipeline, man.
That's what I'm saying, man. I'm not playing with these people because it's the way the economy's going up right now. But it would be offset. Let's just be honest. It would be offset, of course, by federal subsidies. Okay, so we would do all of this, and then when it got to New Mexico, we'd say, this is going to cost. And the feds would say, okay, well, New Mexico, you got to pay this much, and we'll pay that much. And see, we still get our price, and everybody gets the water. Everybody's happy. Shame you and I ain't rich, Jay. We could get like Bigelow Invest. We could retire for life.
No, yeah, I mean, have you seen like a lot of those? Towns in West Texas, dude? I mean, it's bad enough that the cities themselves have to truck in water. I mean, it is bad. Something's definitely got to be done. And what's interesting is now Mexico is starting to, like, throw up a tizzy about their water rights. They're like, hey, y'all using up all the goddamn water before any of these things, any of it crosses the border.
Yeah. It's, you know, too, and then who was it the other day was talking about some freshwater aquifer in, was it Tijuana or somewhere along the border.
Come on, Joe, I mean, we're dealing with fresh water, but, I mean, look at what we've done to the salt water, dude. I mean, you're on the Gulf. You know that BP shit's still causing problems.
Yeah, see, but you see how we were talking about the desalinization and all of that? Look, I guarantee you in 50, 100 years, there'll be 200 or 300, maybe 400 desalinization plants around the world. You can bet your ass on that. Unless we find a better way to convert salt water to fresh. What bothers me is, even if
all
ice caps...
Dude, I mean, look at India, man. I mean, they can't even use
the
fresh water that they have, dude. I mean, the Ganges River is basically the world's biggest open sewer.
And pretty soon, all the fresh water we have locked up in ice is going to be in the salt. So, yeah, it'll make it a little easier, but it's still going to be, you know, contaminated, basically, for lack of a better way of saying it.
And, Joe, what are you going to do about the Pacific, man? I mean, Fukushima is going to be hemorrhaging radiation into it for the next 100.
Speaking of that, I was reading yesterday or the day before, they finally managed to get most of it froze off now so they can start.
No, they didn't. That's a bullcrap story.
Heather, educate them.
That's a bullcrap story. It's not even working right.
Well, no, I heard that. No, they said that in the beginning of the story. They said they were having
they're trying to build the ice wall, but... Unit number 5's having problems now. The whole site's running out of control. I wouldn't believe anything.
Oh, I don't doubt that at all. No, I don't doubt that
at all. The whole site's out of control, if you ask me, and I wouldn't believe anything the TEPCO says or anything the Japanese government says.
The only thing I heard that I thought might have been true was when they were talking about, because the one guy said they couldn't, whatever it is that they're trying to freeze underneath through the pipes just wasn't working. He said that, but the area...
Well, of course it's not working. Knowing that, but the whole site's like collapsing, and it's on like a, I mean, the whole site's a complete mess. I mean, they have earthquakes every day. I mean, not every day, but they're having enough earthquakes.
What I seen was that one building they showed that big, I guess it was like an ice sheet over that floor. But that's the only thing they've ever showed. They haven't even showed anything else.
Well, I don't know if I would trust that either.
But they might have froze that just so they got something to show. Ow, sorry.
Dude, underground, they're having a hard time getting it down to 55 degrees.
Yeah, I know. I was reading that. I don't know if they're going to be able to do underground. It's looking like...
this is another good point. Even if they ever do get the ice wall to work and they sequester water from around the plant, you know all that's going to do, right? Foundation's going to settle and sink like mad.
Well, it's already sinking. It's been sinking since this whole thing started. I mean, it's never stopped.
Y'all do remember the China syndrome, right? You know what happens when radioactive
hits
water.
It is the China syndrome over there with 4 reactors which are going down and they can't even find them. With the best one, maybe 6 on the way.
Here's exactly what's going on with Fukushima. The core is molten and it is loose. And the only thing they can do to keep it from running away is to bathe it in water, and it's like they are trying to keep a leaky sieve filled up with water, and now it's a nuclear leaky sieve, and, I mean, the ice wall is not going to work, dude. I mean...
They better do something, because if that core gets out of there and breaks out of its shell and hits water itself, it's over.
I think the only thing that could save us is if either Optimus Prime showed up with all of his Transformer homies,
Jesus,
and they did...
That's going to be like 200 megatons, man.
Dude, or if Astar Commander, came down with his Galactic Federation Light mothership.
They didn't even have the technology to clean up Rocky Flats, and now they're building homes next to it. I mean, from what I basically understood, talking to people in Colorado, they basically imploded stuff, moved stuff off-site, and the stuff is still there. So, I mean, if I took a Geiger counter, I'm sure the readings would be insane. They still have a closed-off area, which is still closed off to the public. So, I mean, they didn't have the technology to clean up Rocky Flat. So they don't have the technology to clean up Fukushima, and they're still trying to fix Chernobyl, which is still, you know, you heard what our guest said. You know, no one wants to you know, they have to put another sarcophagus over it, and they're fighting, and no one wants to do it. So, I mean, it's...
I mean, yeah, Joe, what exactly are they going to do? And they can't build a sarcophagus around it. I mean, Chernobyl's core has passed through the groundwater layer, dude. I mean, it's infecting the whole water table.
Well, I'm telling you, dude, if it goes China syndrome on them, it's going to be like 250 kilotons. I mean, you could lose a chunk of Japan. And pretty much California is going to be effed.
Yeah, there
will
be no
California and Oregon and Washington, they've already gotten
reports.
Well,
they're going to need that legal pot then, buddy. You're growing in a dog, basically.
They've already gotten reports of fallout on those areas and in the U.S. after it happened. And knowing that, but they've even, you know, we're still getting everything else fallout. I mean, it's just insane.
It is insane. I don't know what the hell.
And I'm reading reports now of Tokyo. People are getting sick in Tokyo. So it's like it's never stopped.
Well, Joe, you heard about, like, you know, we talked to USS Ronald Reagan, I mean, right next to it when it was happening. And, I mean, Joe, you've heard of what happened to some of those people, right?
Yeah, well, we knew that was a stupid thing the day we heard that. I was like, come on.
I mean, come on, Joe. They were saying that it was snowing and the snow tasted like tinfoil. When I heard that, I was like...
Yeah, you're dead. That's what I would have said.
Very long.
It's that was just... I don't even know why he did that. That must have been another one of those, let's see what radiation does to our troops. Like, we didn't
what gets 50. Me is they knew about radiation because they tested it in the desert and also at... Or is that the toll? So they've known for like 50-some-odd years what it does.
Well, this was a nuclear aircraft carrier, so it's not like radiation detectors all over the goddamn ship weren't going haywire and they didn't know.
Oh, yeah, they're probably saying, oh, no, this isn't the kind of dose you're thinking, you little badge, you're downstairs working, because, you know, when you're on the nuclear floor, you have to wear your badge.
Well,
you're
looking at
your badge going pink, going, oh,
you probably
fuck.
Remember that little section they had about nuclear, biological, and chemical weapons. The only thing they tell you how to survive is the initial dose from a nuclear impact, dude. They don't tell you about fallout or residual radiation or anything about that. They're just like, try to avoid it. And it's like, man, dude, I was just reading through the Army survival manuals about it, and all they care about is the initial dose. I mean, everybody in our military, they're willfully ignorant by the government's behest about this nuclear, about, like, the effects of radiation.
Well, it's Fukushima's a sad state. And, you know, somebody said the other day, why don't they just cover in concrete like they did Chernobyl? I said, well, Chernobyl's base was intact.
They tried to do that in at Rocky Flats too. Well, no, what happened is at Rocky Flats. What happened in Rocky Flats? They tried to put that stuff in concrete, and it doesn't solidify. It comes to this podcrete, which they can't do anything with, and it's radioactive crap, and it's like sludge. I mean, that's the leftover waste, and who knows where they shipped it to? They probably shipped it to either WIP or Hanford, and that's why part of the problem why they're going out of control. They have this Rocky Flats crap out there, you know, and every other crap from 50 some odd years of stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, if the base is intact, they can use real concrete. But if there's any kind of high dose coming out, no, it's not, and the only other thing I know is the Navy used to use this stuff that was peatcrete to seal off any kind of radioactive in areas. It seemed to work, but you know what? We really don't know.
Oh,
I don't think they're going to tell us. So I got to kind of wonder about it. But I know they used it a lot when I was in the service, and I know they used it a lot before I was in the service, and it did seem to work to an extent. But here the problem is there's no way for them to get underneath this without either causing a bigger problem or completely contaminating their cells and everything around it. So they may have to figure out a way to do a control implosion here of some kind. You know, maybe build a big concrete dome over it and just let the thing go, even though I don't think that will help. But, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do, but if they don't do something, it's going to be bad. I mean, not this
well,
kind
it's
of thing.
All, it's,
bad.
It's already bad if you breathe in numbers.
But not like this. I mean bad like, you know, Japan pretty much going to have to move.
Well, yeah, Joe, but the whole thing about it is you can build domes around this shit all day, but you can't build a dome under the ground. And the fact is that the corium is leaking into the groundwater, and this thing is sitting on an aquifer. going straight into the Pacific, man. It's like the worst case possible scenario.
I know it's bad all the way around, and most people don't realize it, but when raw plutonium hits water, it's kaboom.
Oh yeah,
and so nobody's even really testing any of the thing, anything coming out of the Pacific for this thing. I mean, you know, the
I've seen some Oregon tests that didn't look good, and I've seen some.
There's independent tests. There are people going out there hiring boats and doing like random testing, dude. But there's nothing official. I mean,
well
there probably
the government
is.
Doesn't want to know because if they really do what it, the numbers are, they don't want to tell us.
No, they're not. If it's what I think it is, no, they're not. They're not going to bother telling us because why cause a panic where you don't have to? So a couple people get irradiated, die of cancer. Nobody's going to really know. If I was y'all, if you lived on the West Coast, I wouldn't go swimming in the water above, say, San Francisco. I wouldn't get in the water up there for long periods of time. Or just bring a Geiger counter with you. Test the area. You know,
yeah, Joe, but me and Heather have actually been shopping around for them, dude, and you've got to drop between $500 and $1,000 to get a decent Geiger counter.
You know, I don't know if they still do it, but Heath used to, you could actually buy a Heath kit and build your own Geiger counter.
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that, dude, but that wasn't something I would want to base my life on, man. I mean,
that was pretty good. I mean, they guaranteed it would work. I mean, everything I ever built from them worked great, but...
Yeah, Joe, but that wasn't a real Geiger counter. I mean, that was more like a, you know, smoke alarm.
Hey, it would tell you if there was radiation present. That's what you need to know. It would be... I don't know. It's weird. I know you might get one at a local surplus store for $250 or something like that. And if you get lucky, every now and then you might catch one on eBay or somewhere for $125. But they're usually old, like 1960 versions, you know, something like that. But they still work. I mean, there's nothing wrong with them.
Yeah, man, I've actually got a buddy who's got, like, some of those old, like, duck and cover, like, 1940s and 50s, like, radiation detectors. You know, those old GI units, dude, with, like, you hold them in one hand and you got the wand and you actually have to, like, hear it click and shit.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's those. You can get those. Those, you know. And actually, those work great. You know,
The only thing about them, Joe, is they use, like, some kind of funky battery that's, like, some weird, odd voltage that you'd have to, like, you know, basically rig one up yourself on.
Yeah, actually, who was it? One of my friends used one time. They made a voltage regulator is what they did. They made their own custom battery for it by putting a couple batteries together. And then they used some kind of voltage regulator because it was something like 17.5 or something. It was really weird, 13.3. It was a really weird off-scale thing. I'd have to look it up. It might have been 7.9. I don't know, it was one of them weird ones, but I've seen that in other stuff in the military. They do that so that if it's taken by an enemy, it can't be used. You throw the battery out, it's useless, because odds are they don't have one. I always thought that was a little stupid. I'd figure a real government could, you know, replicate a battery, but still. I'm sure somebody's logic for that was there. Or maybe somebody had a battery company that made those kind of batteries.
Hey, dude, I know you've seen some of those weird old funky batteries just being in the Navy, dude. That's where I saw a bunch of my big old gray government battery, and I'm looking at the specs on it when I'm a little kid, and I'm like, a 120-volt battery? Jesus Christ.
Yeah, what is this thing for? Well, they used to have them, they used to be warning signs all over those. They had those 15-foot capacitors. Man, and, you know, people don't realize that even when a capacitor is charged down, there still may be a trickle charge there. And that's fine on a little bitty capacitor, but on something like that, trickle charge is, you know, 500-600 volts. You know, 100 amps or something.
Yo, so, you know what I could do with one of those capacitors? Oh, my God, that evil mad scientist part of me would... I could fuck some shit up with one
of
those.
I've seen a couple of those, and I've seen a couple of them... we had some kind of, like, thermal batteries on the carrier. They were huge, man. I would say 25 feet long by 8 feet. Well, I have no idea what they were for. Somebody told me it was backup power for that particular section of the ship. Still to this day, I don't know if that's true, by the way. Sounded like a good thing, but who knows? There's all kind of electronics aboard them ships, and I imagine today the electronics is quadrupled. I mean, I imagine everything we got afloat right now is quadrupled. So how's our new supercarrier doing out there with all its new special rail guns and all kind of other stuff? This thing's supposed to be something straight out of science fiction, man.
Yeah, dude, but do we really even need that, man? I mean, there's not a single nation out there that could even screw with a Nimitz-class carrier. I mean...
Yeah, that's true. I was, you know, I was wondering about that when we, what was it, the George Washington or Ronald Reagan, whatever the hell it was. I'm thinking, wow, a new class of carrier.
It's like, yeah, all these new ships are awesome and everything, but look how much money they're spending on it, dude. That new destroyer, Joe, a destroyer costs like more than $3 billion now.
Yeah,
those literal combat ships that they come out with two, like, classes that they're actually adopting instead of just one. I mean, Joe, those ships they're worse than a tin can, dude. I mean, they basically do nothing that a Coast Guard cutter can't do.
Well, you've seen the Navy just put up, they want to bring back the battleship. And I'm like, what the hell do we need a battleship for? We don't fight them kind of battles. So it's going to have one turret gun on it, by the way. Big gun, big turret gun. But what it's actually going to have is it's eight rows of missiles. It's eight rows wide, 84 long, and it can launch them all simultaneously at one time, and it automatically reloads. The whole lower decks are completely automated, and all they do is move missiles around, missiles and fuel. This thing is badass. What do we need it for? I have no idea. I mean, this thing would level cities in seconds, man. It mind boggles to me because, as far as I know, we just don't have that level of hostility with anybody.
Yeah, Joe, but that's kind of stupid, dude. I mean, you could deliver the same payload from any carrier that we've got. Hell, dude, like two or three cruisers.
No, that's what they're talking about. This would be like the equivalent of launching what it would be 8x84 cruise missiles at one time.
Yeah, Joe, but that's just.
That guarantees that nothing is getting all these missiles down. And if they're nuclear tipped, whatever you're going after is dead. I mean, it's dead. Nothing's going to stop this ship, and you're not going to get close to it. That's for damn sure. It's got too many missiles to get close to it. It can probably be rotated, probably all kinds of selections of missiles it can use. I just don't know why we need it.
Joe, the only reason I can think we need one is if we built, like, an awesome battleship, dude. I mean, like, you know, a big old, like, you know, Missouri-class battleship, but instead of having, like, 9 16-inch guns, it's got, like, one giant, like, massive plasma rail cannon that could nail Mars if it wanted to.
Well, actually, it showed this thing, it had...
Just to build it so it looks badass.
It had one big can or one big whatever on the front, one big turret. I don't know what it was actually. What was it? Didn't say, but it did show 10 rail guns along going around it. Now some of them might have been 50 cals or something. There's no way of really knowing, but it said rail gun in the article. But that you never know what that means. It might have been 20 mil. It could have been any damn thing. Whatever it is, I'm sure it shoots a shitload of something at anything incoming. I'm sure that's what it does. God knows what it's shooting, but it's shooting at them. It's just scary because to think we can build stuff like that. Do you realize we build like five of them and just pull off the coast of Russia? What are they going to do? If they even try to launch their missiles off the ground, this thing will rain missiles on their missiles. They'll be just sitting there whistling Dixie, and the missiles that ain't raining on the missiles will be raining on them.
Actually, Joe, if I wanted complete and utter world domination, what I would do right now is, if I was Russia, I would militarize space and own orbit while they're the only ones that can get heavy crap up there.
Yeah, see, that ain't going to work, because the Europeans ain't going to let them get it. And they're not the only ones who can get heavy.
Yeah, but who's going to stop them? I mean, Russia basically owns space.
No, Russia don't own space. There's quite a few companies that can get heavy enough vehicles.
So India and China and Pakistan, they can barely get a man into orbit, like,
they can, but the French are getting pretty good at launching pretty decent-sized vehicles. They got medium loads right now.
So Europeans never had their own vehicle into orbit.
Yeah, but the French have been launching medium payloads now for two or three years. Actually, I think it's been longer than that, actually. But they're doing pretty good. But I've seen four or five heavy lifts.
That's why if I was Russia, I would own. Or if I was playing Risk to Win, I would own orbit right now, because by the time anybody developed the heavy launch capability, it would be.
Don't forget, we got three shuttles in reserve, right? And like enough to launch them seven or eight times. Everybody forgets we still own it. We still have all those heavy lift rockets left over from the
Yeah,
Air
Joe, but since I'm Vladimir Putin and I already own orbit, dude, all you got to do is try to launch shuttles and I'll throw rocks at you down the gravity well all day and you thought
but
the
see, first off, you're assuming we have nothing in space, which I wouldn't make that assumption.
Well, you're assuming.
And you're assuming that those planes that have been sitting up there for 2 years, a year at a time, don't have something to shoot something down going up there. You got to remember that. We've been keeping a president in space. We just haven't been telling anybody. So you got to remember, you don't know what they've been doing or what's on board those craft. I'll tell you what I think we've been doing. I think we've been up there scanning every satellite in space, finding out every vulnerable target and every Russian and Chinese satellite up there. Because we can send this thing up there and just shoot the bitches down. Probably have rail guns on there just plowing through the field.
Well, Joe, you know damn good and well both us and Russia have had satellites up since the beginning of the space.
Oh, yeah. That I don't doubt at all. The things I wonder is I don't think Russia has the space technology that we do. I don't think when a push comes with like DARPA's craft, I just don't think Russia's in that league right now. They want to be. They just can't seem to get stable enough to get enough money to do it. And they could if they could stabilize their country. It's just right now they can't. Putin keeps getting himself into stupid things. I don't understand Putin because right now he could have cut deals with Europe and a couple other people. He could have more money than he knew what to do with. And he just keeps slapping himself in the face. It just doesn't make
sense. Shit, Joe. Everything Putin ever has ever tried to do, America and the European Union have tried to cock-block it on it, man. That's how it's been since the end of World War II. Hell, and before World War II, I mean, Britain's been cock-blocking. Britain and the rest of Europe have been trying to cock-block on Russia since they had czars, man.
All right, well, send me a title. I didn't realize it was a damn quarter after 10.
Well, we didn't start till a half hour late.
That's
anyway.
True. That's right, huh? That's right. So that's not a big deal. Let's maybe put this over here. Big sports show. We don't want that. We want that.
On everything. And when
here we go. Archive's doing good. Yeah, 1 hour and 52-minute archive. Right on the money, man. 3 minutes over.
Cool.
That worked out pretty good. Well, tell everybody good night so we can get out of here. Now I'm going to pig out. Then I'll come back and post archives. Don't forget to send me a title.
All right, I'll do that here in a minute. But all right, everybody. Well, that's been the Unabridged Universe for this week. Who knows? I hope nothing more interesting happens. But for the sake of a news-oriented discussion program, I hope the world goes mad sometime between now and next Friday. And on that, good night.
Good night.
Found them yet.
Chris is the godfather of psychic mediums, and he'll give you a reading you can't refuse.
You better believe it.